This is Change the Narrative, the podcast about innovation in work, life, and culture. I'm your host and tour guide, Michael Hernandez.
All right. I am very excited today because I get to speak with my friend and mentor, Dr. Rod Berger, on this episode of Change the Narrative. And Dr. Rod Berger is a keynote speaker, moderator, producer, and expert in strategic storytelling. He draws on over 4,000 interviews conducted worldwide for Forbes, Entrepreneur Magazine, and Fair Observer, including a cover story about former Virgin executive Jason Feltz for Los Angeles Magazine, as well as various podcasts. He has captured the narratives of investors, CEOs, renowned entrepreneurs, best-selling authors, scholars, and cultural icons, such as NBA legends Magic Johnson and Charles Barkley, alongside United Nations officials and Van Halen's Sammy Hagar, while also exploring the behind-the-scenes world of Formula One. Berger has met with the Crown Princess of Sweden, Pope Francis, United Nations officials, and NGO leaders, covering stories of water insecurity with WaterAid and the intergenerational refugee crisis faced by displaced Sudanese in Uganda, and the impacts of child marriage in West Africa with the La Corsa Foundation. Berger served as a guest lecturer at Vanderbilt University's Owen Graduate School of Management for nearly two decades, focusing on the power of storytelling in business. He has partnered with the Jim Henson Company to create a television show, The Ultimate Goat, that combines his passion for distant lands and storytelling with culture, sports, and puppetry for family programming. Berger conducts moderated keynotes events that blend storytelling with live onstage narratives featuring cultural icons such as Opal Lee, the recipient of the Presidential Medal of Freedom, a nominee for the Nobel Peace Prize, and recognized as the grandmother of Juneteenth. In 2023, Berger received the inaugural Pangea International Literacy Prize and delivered his TEDx talk, Story is Our Currency. He lives in Nashville with his wife and two children. Rod, can I have your life, man?
Thanks, Michael.
That is quite a resume there, and it's sort of long, but I decided that it was important to include that because it is a really interesting story and journey in your professional life, and I'm really excited to dig into that today and find out about your latest project, which is your first book. And as listeners know, this season on the podcast, we've dedicated to the secrets behind authoring your first book and publishing. So I'm really excited to have you here. I think we first met, was it 2016, 2017, something like that? Project for Spotify. Yeah, that was really exciting. And we've been fast friends and colleagues since. So very excited to hear your thoughts on publishing your first book and your insights on that and hearing more about it too. So why don't you just start by telling me, first of all, what this book is, what it's about, what it's called, and who is it for?
Great question. And I have to say, I had to join you in your authorship, right? I had to join the club. It is The Narrative Edge, Authentic Storytelling That Meets the Moment, and the publisher is Wiley. It's a great question. Who is it for? It's interesting because through the interviews that I've conducted over the years, people would always say to me, especially in the beginning, they would say, well, who is your audience? You know, do you have a focus? And I would say, actually, it's everybody. Because everybody has a story. So I didn't want to focus just in one sector, around one topic, because I've always felt that it made me better as an interviewer, as someone who loves to capture story, to hear sort of that, it's like four dimension, you know, it's that three dimensional, whatever you sort of thinking like the ultrasounds now that you can get where you can see the baby, you know, it's just like unbelievably powerful, that technology, but it's sort of the same in stories. I wanted to capture, and I still do, like everybody has a story. Like when I go to Kroger, Michael, there is a guy that works in the produce section who he's probably late 50s, early 60s. He works 6 days a week. The seventh day, he works at Goodwill. He is an African-American male who has two sons who live out west, and he is a shining light every time you walk into that produce section. And we share the same name, which I think is, for whatever reason, I've always been sort of fascinated with people who have the same name. I once thought maybe it'd be a good coffee table book to find all the Rod Bergers and like capture their stories. Maybe one day. But he's such a shining light that I want my kids, we always go up and talk to him. Right? He has a story. He may not think that he has a story, but he's got a story. right? And it's, to me, it's as valuable, if not more valuable, than someone that you know, or it's a name, or it's, you know, it's an athlete or an entertainer. And so that's really the essence or the origin of the book, is to say, and that's, and I know we'll get to this, but, you know, I am very fortunate. I'm one of the lucky ones where the publisher came to me. They said storytelling was just, you know, running rampant. Everybody wanted sort of a book on storytelling, and they thought that my background was unique, which I've always been told is dangerous to be unique, right? Yeah. Sounds good. But because I have captured story in so many different domains. And so that's really, this book is for, it's for you. It's for your daughter. It's for your fiance. It's for your colleagues at the school. It's for a leader of an organization, and not just here in the U.S. You know, I'm incredibly proud of my personal friend network around the world, the people that have been so gracious with me. So it's really, you know, it does span. And also for students, I think, you know, I tried to write that. I'm trying to think back now through the manuscript. I don't think there's anything in there that's not appropriate.
Yeah. You gave me an advanced copy of the transcript, and I was reading through it, and it's really beautiful and endearing. And, you know, I kind of wrestled this with this myself writing my book. Should it be ideas and theory and philosophy, and how much needs to be practical, how to kinds of things? And you have different audiences wanting different things at different points in their life. And from what I can tell, it's kind of a great balance of putting things into perspective. And it's also, I don't know, very personal. And we'll get into that a little bit later. So you are actually in the middle of writing this book, right?
It's all done. It's been turned in. It's complete. Okay. So the editor, I actually signed off with my editor yesterday. That's okay. Quite a relationship. Hopefully we'll talk about that.
Congratulations.
Thank you. It's a little jarring because you don't have control in this sort of the classic sense of what control maybe feels like, or what we think control means in our lives. And so, you know, when she emails and says, everything's been sent to Wiley, now you're moving on. Yeah, it's done. You know, it's done. But I think I shared this with you the other day, just how vulnerable the process is. Because to your point about, like, you know, how much of yourself do you share? And so obviously you've seen a preview of some of the chapters. I didn't want to bore you with the whole manuscript right out of the gate. Yeah, I took that approach. I mean, but that was a conscious choice right out of the gate.
And so when is the book ready to be released, or when's it expected to be published?
So it'll be on bookshelves November 12th.
Okay.
So we already have, people can pre-order, which sounds so, I mean, I have to get used to this, right? Now you have to sell your voice, right? I know you've gone through this.
Yeah.
It's very awkward, and you're asking people for blurbs and your foreword and all these other things, right? Mm-hmm. I'm trying to go through the, you know, that, I don't know. It's just that, it's like going through your high school yearbook, all the people that have impacted you through time, and seeing if they would, you know, consider writing something about the book. So yeah, that's the process that I'm in right now. So it's purely about now promotion, yeah. I guess.
Exactly. You have to tell the story of your story.
And, that's right.
yeah. It will definitely have links to that pre-order. If people are interested, you can check that out. So reading your bio, you have a pretty prolific and rich professional life, it seems like. Why did you feel the need to write a book?
Well, so I don't know how you were as a kid. I guess you might be similar in this way, but I was the kid that, it wasn't always my approach, but I could, you know, I could wrap up sort of a term paper with hours to, you know, like just at the 11th hour, I could sort of wrap it up and finish it. So I would, writing didn't scare me. It felt like a challenge. Like some people I know say they ultimately want to run a marathon, that's their, like a literal marathon. That's not part of my paradigm. But for me, it was writing. I've always just loved words and the power of words. And I think that the origin of that is my late father, who grew up in Nazi Germany, and he raised me on 60 Minutes. And I mean young, like 4 years old, starting to watch 60 Minutes. And the power of language, and that one word can impact a story, a perception, an opinion, a bias. And so I don't know if that's the, you know, the genesis of it, but I will say that those were moments that I cherish that we had, because he was, and I can say this because he was my dad, but he was sort of that classic German. There was a bit of a distance, right? So we weren't, this was not the affectionate father-son relationship where you sort of talking about the game afterwards and how you did, or if you, you know, you were dumped or you got a new girlfriend. That wasn't what I had, but I did have 60 Minutes and Stories, and that was a connection for me.
Yeah, and just thinking about the times that we live in and how important that is and having that perspective.
Yeah.
And like you said, how words can move people so easily and so quickly. And having the right words to not only speak for yourself, but your perception of things and how we influence other people, which is important for everyone, you know, whether you're a business leader or a teacher or, you know, spouse, a parent, all of those things are so important. That's amazing. So a lot of us who are listening to this show are first-time authors or aspiring authors. And so I definitely want to dig into your writing process, like what it was like for you and some tips and suggestions you might have for other people. So we're going to get into a lot of that. And so when you were writing, you said you're able to crank stuff out kind of at the last minute, but what did you find were some of the biggest challenges you faced when writing this book?
So I have a natural, sort of the toddler in me pushes back at, like formality. And so when I hear people who have a writing process where it is very regimented and they are, you know, they're starting with a note card and they're building their sort of their table of contents and their blueprint, right? I get lost in the weeds. And so for me, that was really challenging because where do I start? And yet here's the irony, Michael. I love to understand sequence. I love patterns. Just naturally, I enjoy that. And so for me, when I'm thinking about, like, I was more concerned about how to name my chapters and the wave I was taking, I'm taking people on, than anything. And so I sort of had to, I dabbled a little bit in the formality. Then I had to kind of find my way. But for me, there was a flash point when I felt really good about what I was doing because they came to me, right? So it was a little bit different. I hadn't been building a manuscript, and like a lot of my friends are like, well, I've been working for the last couple of years on a book and I've got to find the right publisher. And so this was very different. I mean, this was 6 months basically in total from, oh my goodness, I have a publishing deal to manuscript is done.
Wow.
So that was a very compressed timeline for me. But that flash point was when I was talking with a dear friend of mine and I just said, he was saying to me, what do you want people's experience to be? And I said, I want them to read this like an old school album. Like each song is its own. And there's an A and a B side. And maybe the artist is sort of communicating something with the order with which they laid out their songs and what side they are in the album. And that gave me great freedom because it allowed me to focus in the moment and say, today I'm going to work on chapter 4 as an example. And I'm just going to be in chapter 4. It's like, it's a day outing for me. I'm just in that. I'm not worrying about, am I, you know, sort of plugging into quote, you know, the API of everything, you know, does it make sense from chapter 3? Does it make sense in my sort of handing the baton to chapter 5? And so I don't know why, but that stuck with me. And I hope that that's something that I keep in future projects where it's just, it's an album. You know, I'm not trying to do, you might pick it up, Michael, and you might resonate with, you know, whatever, you know, 3, 7, 9, and 12. But somebody listening or watching might say, well, I really like the opening and the close and chapter 6 right in the middle. And that's exactly what I want.
That's a great metaphor. I think that's the thing that people kind of freak out about is like this overwhelming mountain that they have to climb. And what's great about nonfiction books, and I was just talking to an acquisitions editor in the last episode, Valerie Witte, about this, you know, you can break it down into different sections. It doesn't have to be stream of consciousness, a continuous, you know, chronological kind of thing. You can have different sections and work on them independently, but you already have the framework, so you kind of know how they connect and maybe where they are in relationship to each other, but you can work on them independently. I think that's a great way to do it. And, you know, people are talking about different metaphors of how they approach it. Like someone was saying, it's a love letter to her clients. you know, kind of an onboarding. This is our philosophy and what we, how we work together. So I think that's a really great idea. It's a great tip to like have a metaphor, like, and frame it in a way like, what, who is this for and how am I approaching this? That's fantastic.
And I, if you don't mind me sort of extending on that, here's what it allowed me to do, Michael, which was, you know, we talked with, I'm a huge sports fan and I write about it in the book. We all have, I think, those things in our lives, hobbies, you know, passions or pursuits that just, for whatever reason, they light us up. And you want to be in the zone. They talk about like an athlete being in the zone or a singer or, you know, songwriter. I think the same goes for all of us that write, that there is this. And when you start riding that wave, it's that little, that battle. I'd be curious if you've gone through this where, you know, you're, it's like the kids say, on a heater, you're in the zone and you start to recognize you're in the zone, which is dangerous because you can very easily sort of tip over. It's like you're on a tightrope. And so when I came to that realization about the album, right, and songs, I took the same approach within the chapter itself, so that if I sat down with my bowl of skinny pop popcorn, which I do, and like four glasses of water and coffee, and I have this whole setup, I gave myself the same freedom, the same permission, that if I sat down saying, I'm going to write about Michael and his work with Nat Geo or all these other things, but something hit me. I had a memory about something that applied to sort of the essence of that chapter. I don't push against it at all. I say yes, and I write to that. Because 9 out of 10 times, it will read better than when I was sitting there trying to, in sort of a modular fashion, stack together these building blocks. And I'm not that way. I'm more Jackson Pollock. I want to sort of throw the paint against the wall. I'm not an engineer. And so that is one piece of advice I would absolutely give anybody that wants to write. I think you have to go through the process of giving yourself permission. As corny as that sounds, but if you sit with yourself in that moment and you give yourself permission, all of a sudden you have a flood of different things that will come in. Even if you're writing a much more tactical book, right? Sort of a how-to. That's my belief.
100%. Yeah, I feel like the act of writing is also the act of idea generation. Because like you said, you get into this flow, like you start talking about stuff that you already know or had planned to talk about. And then some idea kind of pops up and another idea kind of pops up. And you're like, oh, this is a better way to say it. Or, yeah, that's actually what I meant. And I have 100% like go with it. And that's what editing is for. You put it all down and then later on you come back to it and see if it makes sense or what are the best pieces to keep later on for sure. Yeah, definitely don't limit yourself. That's great advice. Yeah. So, Rod, you're very accomplished. You're used to writing a lot. You've written for Forbes and some other publications. So you've done a lot of writing. Not everyone has as experienced as you are doing that. And so one of the big things that I hear people wondering about is how to find time to do the writing, because it does take quite a bit of time. Now, you're a dad. You run a busy consulting business and you do keynote speaking and things like that. How did you find the time to write and what was your schedule like? Just sort of logistically to find the time to write?
I would write in sort of batches or bunches. I sort of leaned into, so here's and I have no doubt, whether you, there are people who are listening and watching this that have this, where it can be dangerous, I think, when you can do something at a pretty good clip, like naturally, like you're not stumbling through sort of maybe what would be expected blocks. And so the danger of that is sitting there going, I'm looking for my muse of the day, or, you know, because I'll get inspiration from all over the place. I'll be at the gym listening to something and I'll say, oh my goodness, that reminds me of this. And then I'm into it. It's basically really what it boils down to me, or for me, is when I'm writing, I'm writing. So even if I have 2 hours, I am all in for those 2 hours. Now, this probably won't surprise you based on what I've said prior, but I can't schedule it in. Like that for me is really tough. Now, towards the end of the writing process, I had a space that I was able to escape to for a few days where it was just me and I was able to, you know, focus solely on the writing. And so that was incredibly helpful. But, you know, I wish I could say, you know, every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, I'm able to carve out a half a day. But you're right. There's life that happens, or, you know, you're just being a parent. I mean, there are a million things going on. So I'd really tried to just find where I could spend, you know, 6 hours here and not feel guilty. So I don't know if that answered your question, but I just sort of had to say, and or think ahead, but just like within a week, okay, it looks like Friday's going to be open. You know, in essence, I'm not here. Kids, dad's not here. I am just writing today. You know, but maybe I'll get to the point where I can be much more regimented and know that Monday, Wednesday, Friday, I've got a process that I'm going to partake in.
Right. So if you didn't have a dedicated day or time every single day or every single part of the week, you still found that you needed like a block of a couple of hours to kind of get into the flow. Is that right?
Yeah, because I could, I mean, I don't know why. I think it's a little bit like maybe a sculptor or something. But if I would honestly think about it per chapter. I never thought about it per section. So if I said to myself, I'm going to work on chapter seven, that's the next. Then if it took me 5 hours to get a first draft, it took me 5 hours. If it took me 2 hours because everything was humming, right? I mean, I just had a great night's sleep and I was really in the zone. Great. So that was, again, that permission where I sort of gave myself that opportunity to say, no expectations, you know, and that's the beauty of it. The only thing I would actually ever look at, just to give myself, it's almost like looking when you're driving, you think, oh, I need, you're on a road trip. How much gas do I have left? Like you're singing songs, you're talking, and you're like, oh my gosh, we've already ripped through, you know, three quarters of a tank. I would glance down, like even on a treadmill, and look at word count in a given chapter. And it had not because I was shooting for a goal or a target, but to understand the rhythm of the wave that I was on within that chapter. In essence, was I running a little bit long in what I was trying to convey, or had I not given enough sort of oxygen to it? Like, did I not put the wine in a decanter and let it breathe? Because if I got sort of like a million thoughts out and I was only like 1,200 words in, well, that's not the experience I want for people. So that would be the only reason that I would look down at the word count, was just to get an idea of kind of, okay, that feels like the rhythm that I'm going for here. That's the tone. That's the pace. It's like, you know, you're just snapping your fingers, you know, thinking about that experience.
Wow, that's great. I definitely want to talk about writer's block in a second, but I'm going to go back to this idea you had. You said about a muse, and I haven't really talked about this yet with any other authors, but I feel it's so important. Like, what inspires you? So what were your muses? What sort of inspired you? Was it like a one-time thing at the beginning of the book, or was it like every day or every week is something different, or how did that work for you? What inspired you?
Great question. Absolutely the kitchen sink of life. I mean, you saw a few of the chapters, but I share stories. I share stories that are personal to my own sort of family life. I share stories of interview experiences. And one story I share is about when I was coaching my son's basketball team. I didn't even think about that until I was sitting there watching my daughter's team this past season. And I thought, wait a minute. That story, like even when I was recalling it in my own mind, took me back there like a great song. And so, you know, I mean, I will randomly, you know, sort of fire up social media or Instagram or see some video that somebody put out there and think, huh. So, and it's because, again, I try very hard to have a very, you know, it's like the Army Corps of Engineers, you know, when they dam up a lake during a certain time of the year, right? They control sort of the water in a lake. I just let that water come out, because I will see it everywhere. Movies are a huge influence for me. TV. And I think it's also a product because of the way I've approached my interviewing and work anyway, where I'm just fascinated by people of all backgrounds. And so the motivation, that's the kind of the exciting thing. It's everywhere for me. But that's also there's a challenge to that, because you can be overstimulated. You know, I'll walk away from this conversation and think about probably seven different things and think either I should have put that in the book, or I love that idea for the next book, you know, yeah. Or I didn't know. Okay. And, or that I said something to you even during this interview where I communicated something in real time that I hadn't put into words, but I liked that. And I want to sort of lay that track down.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really great. I love that. Like, life inspires you. which sounds kind of like cheeky and sort of like vague, but it's true. I mean, like, encounters with people or an experience you have. For me, it was like, you know, lessons or experiences in the classroom teaching, but also for me, my muse often is going to museums and getting out of my routine. I feel like for me, if I do the daily routine again and again and again and again every single day, that's boring and it really like shuts down any opportunities for me to be creative. I have to have a mind jog. Like, I have to have something that's different or fresh. So I don't know. People have different ways of coming up with ideas, but I love yours. And just sort of listening and paying attention and making connections to what's around you. It doesn't have to be anything special or huge or costly to be your inspiration. That's really great. Okay, time to pivot to the question every writer has, which is the writer's block, right? Yeah. So people have different techniques of overcoming this, or at least they say they do. I don't know if they actually, they're just making it up when they talk to me. So what did that look like for you? What were the times when you were kind of stuck? And were there like mindsets or strategies you had for overcoming those times when it just wasn't flowing?
So I'm a big Jerry Seinfeld fan. And when I'm angry at the world, I'm a big Larry David fan.
There's a Venn diagram there somewhere, I think.
That's right. That's right. And there was a clip of an interview with Seinfeld where they were asking him that. And he just very bluntly said, there's no writer's block. Like, it doesn't exist. I mean, and even sort of the tone and intonation was, it's an excuse. That's the way that I interpreted that. Now, I used that as motivation. So in those moments when I felt uninspired or, you know, just sort of lacking that inspiration, because that for me is the key piece. It's not even sort of the writing component. It's the inspiration. Mm-hmm. That's how I equate it. Because to me, if I say writer's block, it's that I struggle to like write. And so I take that out of the equation. For me, it's the inspiration. Because I think when we're inspired, you know, it's like you pick up a guitar if you play the guitar and you're just inspired in that moment. You're not maybe not writing a song, but you're on your path to doing that. So yeah, anytime that I felt, I don't know, like sort of held down by deadlines or that pressure you put on yourself, I would watch that clip of Seinfeld saying there is no, like, it doesn't exist. Now, I know it sounds very off-putting and dismissive. How I channeled it was, in essence, like self-talk, you know, like, no, I'm better than this. I can do this. I just proved it. You know, I just wrote the other day something that I really like. But that also, I think it's also personality driven. Like, that's kind of how I operate life. It's how I coach youth sports, you know, it's, and so I plugged into that, but that was big for me to just to, as a reminder, like I texted it to myself so I could go back and just listen to him say in 10 seconds that there's, you know, it doesn't exist. It's probably a terrible answer for your audience. And I'm not mean it to come off as, you know, it probably comes off very poorly. It's just that I think we all have our own relationship with the challenge that we put in front of ourselves, right? This battle between what goes on in our mind and what we convey publicly. 100%. And sometimes it's a war and sometimes it's a battle. And yeah. So I can't tell you how to fight your battle or how to scheme the war that you're up against. I can just say I had to find things that basically forced my butt into the gym of writing.
See, it's your German work ethic coming through.
I can't escape it.
And I think that's sage advice too. Like, everyone's got their own way and their own path. Of course, if you're struggling with it, you don't want to hear that. You're like,
the other thing too, I would say to that, and this goes to when the publisher, when they reached out to me, I had nothing to lose, right? Because they were reaching out to me. Mm-hmm. And I said, look, if you're looking for a how-to book, like a 7 steps to write a story, like, I'm not the guy. There are plenty of very talented people that can do that. but that's not me. And they're like, no, no, no. That's why we're coming to you. So that was good. But for me, it wasn't prescriptive. Mm-hmm. And so part of the writer's block, I think, is that internal battle of, are you writing for, like, what's your premise? Is your platform that you're writing for other people, or are you writing sort of through yourself? I don't mean it from like an ego perspective, but if you're writing just to write what you think people want to read, you're probably going to have more writer's block. Like, whenever I've done anything in life, Michael, where I've gone outside of my voice, you know, they always talk about, does an author have a voice? That's what they'll tell you. Like, when I've interviewed people just for media in the publishing world, it's like they'll know right away if someone has their voice. And if they don't, they scrap it, or they don't think it's going to work. So they're always looking for that, you know, voice. And so I just think that, it, you know, it's like I go back to when I started public speaking, I was a teenager. I was the classic. I had a teacher who saw something in me and kept pushing me. And I write about some of this in the book. And I couldn't believe it. He said, well, now you're going to do this and you're going to do that. He never really asked. I just found myself like on stages. And then there was a national competition and I was fortunate to win that. And it was like, wow, they're going to pay me and I'm 17 to go speak around the country. This is pretty incredible. You get a little full of yourself as a teenager when they're asking you if that hotel's okay and what's, do you want a window seat on the plane, right? And I got asked by my own high school to come back and speak to seniors. And I was like, this point, I may have been a freshman in college. Whatever it was like, this was like me talking to myself out there. Well, it went horribly because I went outside of my voice. I tried to do things that I thought I needed to do to meet the needs or expectations of that audience. And while that is probably the most horrific, humiliating, awful professional experience in my life, it was, I mean, that is a tent pole for me. I know that if I'm sort of veering off, it's not going to go well. I cannot be anything but myself. And that has helped me when I've been in very dangerous places around the world where they say, don't do something. But I go, I mean, I'm reading the moment and I feel like it's going to be received well. And it is, because I'm being like myself. And so that's where I think that gets tied to that writer's block. Anytime I've ever been like, ah, it's only because I'm even thinking of an idea where I'm going to have to ascribe to somebody else's plan. And for me, that's when I kind of know, okay, this is not authentic to me.
That's so great. I mean, when approaching a big project like this, it's scary and we want to impress people, whether that's your publisher or your editor or the audience. And the cliche of being true to yourself still stands true. Like you said, people want to hear what you have to say, not what somebody else has to say, or be a mirror and reflect what I think of myself. But they're coming to you as the expert in something. And so be that person, be, like you said, authentic. That's fantastic. So I do want to talk with you. You've mentioned a couple times about working with a publisher and how they approached you. I do want to talk about that publishing piece and working with an editor, but sort of some nitty gritty logistics for folks who are about to attempt it. Maybe they have their voice, maybe they have their muse already, and they're like, yeah, but how do I do it? So could you give, like, sort of in a nutshell, sort of, you know, a day-to-day workflow? Like, how did you, what was your process logistically of writing? You mentioned something about popcorn and water and coffee. how did you, like, maybe frame it for yourself? What did you do on a daily basis to kind of get through a pretty quick pace, 6 months to write an entire book?
I don't know if I did it well or if I would do it again, but the process for this, I'll share this, was probably the initial sort of jarring moment for me. Like, I love this question. Like, what was your, you know, welcome to the NFL moment, Michael? Well, when I got blown up on a tackle or something, you know, my sort of welcome to the publishing world was when I had my calls with a series of editors that'll be a part of this process, and my sort of main editor for the manuscript. And I spoke with her, and I naively went in thinking that I was going to be told, all right, Rod, you, here we go. And this is the first deadline and we got to do this. And then we're going to hit this. Not at all. So what I was told was, and I had to reframe it like, oh, I'll take it as a compliment. But because it was very nerve-wracking, I had to sort of take the reins. It was like, whoa, whoa, I'm in the passenger seat. The person passed out, and I've got to grab the wheel, and we're on the 405. Well, we're not going very fast, so maybe it's not so dangerous, but 405. A little California humor. I lived there for 7 years, so I can say that. But so I asked her that, right? I had a slew of questions, and she said, it's up to you. What do you mean it's up to me? I don't want it to be up to me. I need you to tell. Like, I felt like I needed her to tell me. It's like a kid who first maybe goes to college and says, whoa, whoa, whoa. I need, where's the manual here? How do I live life without mom and dad or right. my caregivers, my grandparents, whatever? So I said, well, you know, do I send you a chapter at a time? I mean, she was like, no, it's literally. And I said, well, can you give me an example? And she said, well, look, some authors send every thought they have along this path to finalizing the manuscript. Others on the other side of the spectrum will say, it's nice to meet you, Michael, and I look forward to working with you. And when's our deadline? Okay, there it is. You'll be hearing from me like within 24 hours of that deadline with everything. And what happens, so I didn't know this. So when you have your manuscript deadline contractually, that's turning in the final manuscript to your editor. Then they have, let's say, 3 to 4 weeks to polish that rock, right? To clean everything up with you. Mm-hmm. And so initially I thought, oh, I am going to communicate with her all the time. I want as much feedback. I don't want, I couldn't fathom turning something in at the last second where no one had looked at it. Because what happens if she says, this is terrible? Mm-hmm. Then for 3 to 4 weeks, it's the worst thing ever. And I hate the project. I never want to do it again. And I get it out, but I'm not proud of it. Mm-hmm. So if there was ever a moment of sort of flailing, mm-hmm. professionally, personally, emotionally, that was that moment for me. And I had some missteps. I made some initial promises. I mean, it wasn't like she was my parent, but I, you know, like, oh, okay, I'm going to send you something at this point. I started to very quickly look at the calendar and thought, wait a minute, we're going into the holidays. I mean, there was just so much going on that I got nervous when I would give her a hard deadline. This Friday, I'm going to give you, you know, two chapters, and these are the two. And then it became this war. Talk about a war. That was just me and my calendar.
Yeah.
That created more of that whatever writer's block of anything was that component, the fear of the clock based on what I foolishly promised. Mm-hmm. So what I ended up doing, and I'll get to sort of the day-to-day, but what I ended up doing was I sent her. So to calm my nerves, I did all the initial stuff when you open a book. Like, I worked on the table of contents, the acknowledgement page, you know, the introduction. And you know why? Because to be honest, I just wanted to feel successful. I just wanted to feel like, okay, I check a box. These are things that are going to have to be due. Mm-hmm. And I can at least tell myself I'm making some progress. Mm-hmm. So once I did that, I sent that to her, which there was nothing really to do other than, you know, I mean, at that point, that's just sort of your voice thanking people in your life. So I'm not sure how that was received, but whatever. It's like, okay, Rod, you know, it's good.
Yeah.
Then I submitted four chapters to her. And when I got that feedback, I didn't turn anything else in until the very end. I beat my deadline by 18 hours, I think, something like that, which was come hell or high water, I was going to do. I just Amazing. Wanted to, you know, do that. Amazing.
Yeah.
I will say I did not think about how much this woman, who I've never met in person, right? How much she became so prominent in my mind's eye. Because it's like you want there. I mean, I would get an email from her, Michael. I did not open those emails for like a couple of hours. There's this great fear. It's like the tax man's coming or something like that. You just don't know.
Yeah.
But once I did those four and she liked my voice, it actually was amazing. I didn't anticipate this because once I got that from mm-hmm. her, where she was looking forward to the sort of next batch or the, mm-hmm. the whole manuscript. I mean, nothing fueled me more than that. Like she has probably no idea that the sentences that she sent me over email about it, jet fuel for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the day to day was when I was in those moments, I get my big bowl and I literally, you know, go through my popcorn, my water, maybe, you know, an adult beverage, depending upon the time of day. And I just, you know, I just dive into it. I will say the app, it's called Calm. It's a very popular, yep, famous app. They have like a motivational series. And they have one that is for people who are like public speakers or something that I stumbled upon. And it's like a series. And so there's one about before you go on stage. And I think this is, if you can write a book, you can get on a stage. Just because I like both doesn't mean, you know, and I'm a big believer in that. But I will say people who get on stage doesn't mean that they can write. So if you're a writer, actually, I think you have more talent potentially than the people on stage, but you could do both.
Yeah.
And so I, in the heat of the majority of the manuscript, right before I would start writing, I would lay on the floor, listen to that 12 minutes. My phone would be on, you know, focus so that I couldn't get anything. And then put my headphones on and listen to sounds of nature. Mm-hmm. I love movie scores. So movie scores, when I'm really in the zone, it's on repeat. It's Shawshank. It's a song from Shawshank Redemption or like, so that's sort of, I'm always in that space. So I sort of get myself in the zone with that as a, and I don't meditate like as a, I don't practice. But just to hear that sort of calms me, boom, get down, you know, to it. Probably way more information than you want.
That's it. You're going to have to share your workout playlist. I mean, your writer playlist, right? You go to the gym, you've got like the pump up, you go out with friends, like the pump up playlist or whatever.
That's right.
That's really great. Yeah. Okay. So I love what I'm hearing here about, first of all, the process of getting over the fear and imposter syndrome of what am I writing? How do I write it? Is it good enough? By submitting some initial chapters to your editor who can then give you some feedback on this is the right direction to go. And then you can kind of take off and accelerate, I feel. And I felt the same way, although I did have to check in every once in a while, just me. The editor would ping me every once in a while if she hadn't heard from me in a while and say, hey, how's it going? And, but if I had questions, I knew that I could call her and she was very nurturing. And I think we mentioned this in an earlier episode of your editor being almost like a therapist. And sometimes it's like, I don't know what I'm doing. Like, help me out here. Like, am I on the right? Give me like a pep talk. It's not just, technical in nature of like semicolons and, capitalization and grammar, but, so that's really great to have that kind of set up to get your bearings, to get your legs and say like, okay, this is how I need to be writing. And I feel like you can excel in the same way. And then your day-to-day routine is great too. Like the soundscape that you psych up for sitting down for a couple hours at a time, you've got maybe your hands need to move. Maybe you need to like chew gum or eat, like you said, popcorn to kind of keep things flowing. That's a really great sort of personal space to kind of figure out. I love all of that. That's really great. And everyone's got their own routine, right? Okay, so let's talk briefly about publishing. You obviously have written and been published in some pretty big publications, so it makes sense that editors would find you somehow. But you said Wiley approached you. Are they the only people that you were approached by or investigated as a publisher? And tell us, like in a nutshell, what that was like getting to work and coming on board with Wiley.
So through the years, I had publishing sort of houses or agents reach out and ping me because they see that if you have a byline in a publication, that can help for marketing, right? Let's sort of call a spade, which I get and I understand. Mm-hmm. I just never saw a fit that didn't seem, I mean, I really appreciate you brought up the imposter syndrome component, because look, it took me a long time to find my voice as well. Mm-hmm. I found my writing voice just as I was approaching the landing strip in Dakar, Senegal, Western Africa. I made a choice as we were approaching the landing. And I just said, basically, screw it. I'm going to write what I think in my mind, and I think that's going to resonate. And that changed for me. I started getting responses from people I never even knew, CEOs in other parts of the world going, oh, wow, when's your next thing? You know, so there was something about however I was communicating. Mm-hmm. And so why did I say it that way? See, I'm thinking about that, Michael. So, okay, so Wiley. Oh, yeah, so publisher. So I would get people that would ping me. They would ask sort of, have you thought about writing a book, that kind of a thing. And for me, it was all about sort of a timing element, and it kind of ties to my TEDx talk, which I write about in the book. You know, sometimes you're ready to share your story, or it's time to tell your story, and other times it's not. It's still baking, right? Mm-hmm. And so I nothing sort of matched up for me. And I had even, because of my connections now with the television show and these different things, like I've been able to get some meetings with people. But they always felt very transactional. And that did not resonate for me with some of these literary agents. Mm-hmm. And I also knew the game. You have to have, it's like, you know, it's like in television, it's like, well, they're looking for how many, you know, basically wins do you have that they can then leverage and sell you against. And I think it's the same in this industry. And so I never found a fit where someone went, wait a minute, I like your voice. I felt like I would have to write what they would want. And I was like, I don't want to do that. And so here's the irony. I had said to friends and family that in 2024, I wanted to find a publisher. Like, it wasn't a question about writing. It was just finding a publisher. Mm-hmm. I wanted to do it around my birthday, which is in September, late September. Well, I get pinged by Wiley on all my social channels and email and IMs by one of their top acquisition editors. And I thought, well, this is, I don't know. I mean, I always think the universe has a bigger plan in that way. And I thought, okay, I'll take a flyer. And I ended up getting on a phone call with the acquisition editor on a Thursday. I think it was a Thursday. And it went really well. And it was really like, well, we want to work with you. So flattering, and you're trying not to screw up the moment. Okay. And then he said to me, he said, look, we have our sort of international call with our folks on Monday. I think it was Monday or Tuesday. Do you think you can get me a treatment, like your pitch? Cause I want to present it to the team. I'm looking at the clock. I'm looking at the time of day. It's like mid afternoon, kid pickup, everything. And why would I say no? So I said yes, and I spent 6 hours that Saturday came up with the entire proposal and a presentation, the whole nine yards, and delivered it Saturday night. And, you know, within days, then I had the agreement. And, you know, and I don't know if you want to talk about that part of it, but it's definitely a good time to have an attorney, I think, just to be – I think it sends a positive message about the professionalism and how you think of your own work. Mm-hmm. If you can do that, I don't want to play sort of naive or be tone deaf to cost and these sorts of things. But you know, it's like anything in business. I mean, there were things that needed to be tweaked, mm-hmm. and you need to think about your derivative works and sort of how you're going to position yourself. Cause you're in the moment when you're trying to get that deal and when mm-hmm. you're writing. Mm-hmm. But then there's life after the book is done. Mm-hmm. And you have to be thoughtful about that.
Yeah.
Sort of like, where do you want to raise your family? Well, I don't want to raise my family here. Well, then we ought to move now before we start a family.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's a really important point of thinking about the book as a starting point, not a finish line. And like you said, derivative works. So the next book, do they have, you know, first dibs on that? What if you have a spinoff podcast or other articles that you write, and who owns the copyright to all that material? And should you own the copyright or not? You know, these are really important conversations to have. And I did some research. I talked to colleagues and friends who had published already to get their perspective and how it went for them. So I feel like reaching out to folks is also really helpful, because otherwise you have no idea. Nobody tells you. The publisher's not going to tell you. They want a deal that's in their favor, right?
That's right.
And, you know, not that they're, you know, bad people, I think, but they're business people. So, yeah, that's a really great. And what a great story to have that sort of drop into your lap. But again, it just kind of goes to show you that you have to have a track record. You have to have, not just published work, but a reputation, and then people will find you and want to publish you, as opposed to you hounding them. Although you could do that too. You know, like, here's some person who walks in and like, I've got this great idea for a book, trust me. And then they might ask you to submit sample chapters to make sure that you can write and what your tone and voice is. But that's a fantastic story, and that's great advice too. I did not have a lawyer for mine. I didn't feel that I needed it. But like I said, I did talk with folks, and some friends shared their contracts with me so I could kind of look and kind of see.
I think the biggest recommendation I would give in that area, Michael, so we both wrote books around storytelling. Mm-hmm. And if you step back and you think about it, it's like that movie Philadelphia, like Talk to Me Like I'm a 6-year-old or whatever, with Denzel and Tom Hanks. If you step back and you think, well, wait a minute, what part of my life is not about storytelling? Like all of it. And so if I'm not saying, for people out there that maybe they're not writing books about storytelling, but to really kind of sit back and think, well, wait a minute, if it's about this, what other areas of my life do I practice that? Do I consult? Do I, like, what other projects do I, do I represent company? Because that's when it sort of opened my eyes. Now, I had the benefit of having an entertainment lawyer because of the television stuff. And so that's where I was able to lean in, and they're really good at copyright and, IP. And so that was helpful to understand not just the derivative works, but also what's next.
Right.
In essence, the next books, and then you come up with those parameters where you have a little bit more voice literally in that transaction and what that relationship will evolve into. And so that's the part that I didn't know going in, or I was too worried about getting everything else right, the pitch, the treatment, all that.
Wow, that's great. Okay, so what I'm hearing you say is for folks who are new and don't necessarily have a track record of writing or publishing, finding the stories that not only could go into your book as content, but to when you approach a publisher to kind of, self-vet and to prove your expertise in this area. And there's multiple stories that are all around you. Like you said, projects that you've worked on, people you've worked with, experiences you've had. I think that's really great.
It's
advice.
A story, right, Michael? This is where you and I think I'll say it, but we have some, not power, maybe is too strong of a word, but guess what? I don't care what you're writing about. If you want to draw the attention of a publisher because you're fantastic at whatever that skill is, you're going to have to come up with a story, because they're going to want to know that, whoa, that person is really compelling. Let's talk about what a book would look like. So you're going to go into a story mode, whether you like it or not, or whether you're aware of it or not, because that's what they're going to look at. Mm-hmm. How do you, what's your public story out there?
Yeah.
And it's sort of like the TED talk, talk worth, what is it, giving, or whatever the sort of tagline of TED is. Or that needs to be told, something like that. That to me is where we sort of go, hey, we're lucky because that's the world that we live in, but everybody's going to have to think about their story, because you don't want to come across as a novice. It's like I tell my kid, it's like, just do the little things right.
Yeah.
Right. Reply to the email, reach out, be mindful. And if you do that, you don't come across as a novice. It's like podcasts. Everybody has a podcast. That doesn't mean everybody's good. Just because you can fire up a microphone, right, and a video on your phone. Same thing. I mean, everyone thinks they can write a book now because of self-publishing, which you can.
Yeah.
But, what's the point of it? What do you want to do? What's the goal of what you're writing to?
Yeah, and that's exactly what I was going to, finish up our conversation talking about, is should everyone write a book? And if so, what are your final words of advice for aspiring authors?
Final advice. I don't think everybody should write a book. But I do think, to me, that's just a medium to explore. But I do think it's incumbent upon all of us, as the world gets hairier and hairier, to understand the story that we either represent, that we play a role in, what role we play, and in what sort of parts of our lives are we a main character or a supporting character, or we're just the the oak tree on stage that doesn't move. They're all valuable, but I think we need to do a better job of understanding that, because we do leave a wake right? Our actions do, the things that we decide not to pursue or speak up against or for or represent. And so whether it's a book or a podcast or an animator who can really package things together, I mean, it's like my, you know, my 12-year-old, he just had to give a presentation about Seven Wonders of the World, and he went into Canva and he did all this mixed media stuff. That doesn't mean that that's his like area or maybe that, but I was excited to see him think through the impact, what the information he was cobbling together, the impact the presentation would have on his classmates, right? Mm. That to me is sort of the initial steps of understanding storytelling. So I don't know if it's a book. I mean, that's the beauty of now. I mean, you and I didn't grow up with all of these opportunities. We didn't have these platforms. We didn't have podcasts we could listen to for inspiration or, you know, YouTube and these sorts of things. So my advice to writers would be, I mean, it's, again, it's absolutely cliche, but write, be you. Like, you, people who know you should walk away from your book, regardless if they like it or not, right? In essence, who cares about that? But if they can walk away saying, that's their voice, that's them. Like, sure, I hope the book does well. Mm-hmm. But at its core, if people that know me, even sort of on the periphery, if they say, nope, that's him, like, that's Rod, then I feel like I have nothing to be ashamed of, right? I can feel confident in what I did, and I can leverage that for future opportunities and projects. So, yeah, I mean, that's really, I know that's just so trite to just say, you know, be yourself basically, but
yeah,
you read, I know you do. I'm sure you do, Michael. You don't have to say it, but I'm sure you read things and you think that feels like they're just telling me what I want to know.
Yeah.
Or it's surface level. And it's like, you know what? Let's go beneath the waterline. Because that, because to me, I don't care what you're teaching. If you're a professor, when you connect with someone emotionally, that's when they want to start to think about the lessons that you're presenting in front of them, not the inverse of that, right? It's not like, well, his advice, you know, tactically, he gave me an outline. It was out of this world. No, he or she was, you know, they were really impressive. Their energy in the room, they made me think, you know. So just be as authentic as you can. All your faults too, right?
Yeah, that's fantastic. That's great advice. Dr. Rod Berger, his forthcoming book is called The Narrative Edge. Apparently, it is a book about storytelling for everyone. I'm really excited to get my hands on that come this November. Rod, where can people find you and connect with you?
So I love LinkedIn, so you can check me out, just Dr. Rod Berger. Just spell Berger right, B-E-R-G-E-R, right? And D-R for doctor, Dr. Rod Berger on LinkedIn and Instagram. It's all the same handle everywhere. And my website, same thing, drrodberger.com. But if you've got a story idea or just want to connect, I love connecting because that's how relationships like this blossom. So, you know, I'm a sucker for inbound chatter and love those connections.
That's fantastic. Dr. Berger, thank you so much. It's been great talking with you about authoring books, and good luck with publishing your first book.
Thanks, Michael.
I really enjoyed that conversation with Dr. Rod Berger, who is my friend and mentor. And I think I particularly like hearing from someone who is outside of my industry and area of expertise to get a really unique perspective. So in this conversation, I think what really resonated with me the most were several things. The idea that a book is only one of many ways that we can communicate with an audience and share our ideas. Now that we've got platforms like podcasts or YouTube or email newsletters, there's a variety of different ways that we can engage with our audiences and share our ideas. It doesn't have to be a book, but it could be some kind of combination of those things. I also really appreciated that he really talked about this idea of authenticity and being your true self. And I don't know about you, but it's one of those things like, you know, I don't know if I have anything good to say, and the book's already been written by other people. And sure, there's plenty of books that are out there, but no one has told your story or talked about these ideas from your unique perspective. And so really think about the value that you bring to audiences because of your unique experience. Really important to keep that in mind. And then the other thing too is like, you know, thinking about being a first-time author, I don't know if I have a story to tell. I'm not a published author. What should I say? And his idea that, you know, everything is a story. So talk about your accomplishments, talk about a project that you've worked on, talk about the obstacles that you ran into, the successes that you had in surprising ways. We all have something that's really valuable in our personal experience, and to use that and leverage that for your book, and when you talk to editors and publishers about working with them to publish your first book. So I have ideas and links and resources from Rod in the show notes. You can check that out. I also have resources for book authoring and an upcoming webinar about publishing your first book on my website, storytellingwithpurpose.com. And before we leave, just one last reminder that the final episode of this season is a very special one. It is me talking about my journey authoring my first book, and I'm really excited to share with you my thought process of why I chose to write a book, the obstacles that I ran into, my writing tips and suggestions, and working with an editor, how I designed the book cover and came up with the title of my book, and marketing. I got a lot of ideas around marketing, so I'm very excited to share my journey in the final episode of Change the Narrative. So until next time, I'm Michael Hernandez, and happy writing.